Good afternoon. We're back with another episode of the Sean Moat Hoops podcast. I'm pleased to have a well-established coaching guest with me, Sean Micaloon. Sean has been a head coach in the college basketball and high school ranks for a long time now. He's currently the head coach of IMG Academy in Florida, one of the most prestigious basketball high schools in the country. And he's been at a few other basketball powerhouses on the East Coast after coaching at Randolph-Macon and Bucknell beforehand. So, Sean, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing well. Ever since I started the podcast, I've kind of had you on my list as a potential guest. And part of that goes back to when I was in high school, way back in the early 2000s, late 90s. And you were getting your start at Randolph-Macon. And at the time, I guess you probably were just only 22, 23, coaching under Mike Rhodes, who's now the VCU head coach. So, you know, I know it's been a long journey, but take me back to your Randolph-Macon days and how you initially got into coaching.
Well, I was, obviously I played for Hal Nunley, who was a legend in Virginia, and good assistant coaches as well, and actually good other guys that were good players. You know, I played with Nathan Davis, who's head coach at Bucknell, Chris Garlison, who's the assistant at San Diego, who was my roommate in college. And then Mike Rhodes came in as an assistant coach my last 2 years. And so I originally wanted to get into the State Department. I grew up overseas, and my mom and dad were teachers in the military, for military kids in Europe, in Germany. And I figured I would just, you know, go to school, play basketball because I loved it, and then go back over and work in the State Department because I loved living in Europe. And I just fell in love with coaching, with the way in which we prepared, the way in which we worked. I had a knack for seeing certain things on the court. I became kind of a second coach under Coach Nunley on the floor. And, when I graduated, I wasn't fully sure. And I spent a year volunteering, actually, for Coach Nunley. And then I worked daily with Coach Rhodes. And I wasn't sure I was going to go from there. I mean, I worked in the mornings. I worked at Abercrombie and Fitch from 8 to 12. And the rest of the day, I did coaching. So I was getting by the skin of my teeth, and I just fell in love with it. And Coach Nelly retired, and then Mike got the head job, and he offered me the position. I was 22, and that was my start.
So you were 22, and he probably wasn't much older. I think he was 26, 27, and obviously you were coming from a strong Division III program, and it kind of continued under Coach Rhodes. But how was it? Just the first few years, you just graduated and you're playing under, at the time he was a new head coach. How was it just at the very beginning, looking back on it and kind of being thrown into the fire right from the beginning?
Neither one of us were, you got two competitive Irishmen. That's the first thing. I had to adjust. I also had to adjust because, Mike went from like a mentor / like buddy, as a player, and the same thing as an assistant. And then obviously, I had to take a step back and understand he was my boss. But we were super competitive. Our workouts at lunch were hellacious, either one-on-one in that or lifting or racquetball. You name it, we were trying to kill each other. The other thing we tried to kill each other on was just recruiting. We knew that the talent level was a little bit low when we took over because everybody knew Coach Nunley was retiring. And we made it our mission. He wasn't married. I wasn't married. He's married to Jody now, but they weren't married. They didn't have any kids. They had a dog, I think. And so we just literally ran ourselves ragged, getting that thing to as best we could. And honestly, to the point where before I left to go to Bucknell, I was super proud. I mean, they were number one in the country after that for the next couple of years. Made some good runs into the tournament. Had some fantastic players. I mean, we did a heck of a job evaluating. We also did a heck of a job creating relationships, but we went at it in the only way we knew how, which was just effort and turning over every rock. And I learned a great deal from him in terms of just stick-to-itiveness, being true to yourself, and showing that there are no shortcuts for hard work. And so we were able to get that thing going in the right direction. And for multiple years, it was sustained as one of the top 10 teams in the country.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely remember, kind of a significant talent upgrade at that time, in large part due to the recruiting efforts of yourself and Coach Rhodes. And I do remember because I went to, I think it was only 1 year, but I went to 1 year of summer camp at Randolph-Macon, and I remember either during lunch or after camp and watching one of Coach Rhodes' workouts, and I've never seen, somebody sweat or work as hard as I did, watching that after camp one day.
Yeah, I mean his that was the thing. I mean I'm the same way now. I mean obviously we're both in our 40s now, and when I get in the workout it's the same thing. I still walk away with a huge sweat. I have to stretch a little bit more, but I think the fact that if you can get in there and you can show and you can defend and you can work and you can show energy, then your kids will they'll replicate it. And that was that's the thing. He constantly has energy, and that was you had to match it. You had to match it in order to be on that level. And I think that we did a good job of feeding off each other. We did a good job being competitive with each other, healthy competition. We did a good job of mentoring young men. And a lot of those guys have gone on to become coaches. A lot of those guys have gone on to become successful businessmen. A couple of them, we have one neurosurgeon out of that group. Just a fantastic group of young men that bought into something greater than themselves.
Yeah, I feel at that point in time you're almost recruiting players that had the talent to play at the Division I level that were deciding to come to Randolph-Macon, and after you were there for a few years, you mentioned moving to Bucknell. How was it making that jump from a D3 assistant to a D1 assistant?
It was funny in Division Three. You get that stigma in Division Three, like, oh, he's just a D3 guy. Well, my opinion is if you can evaluate, you can evaluate. But the other thing is that people forget in Division One, you have three assistants. A guy to break down video, or a guy that is in charge of alumni or alumni events, or you're in charge of recruiting, and you're in charge of this, and you're in charge of that, when you're in charge of workouts, and you do scouting, and in Division Three, you do all of that. So I found it to be easier, actually. I was able to maybe spend a little bit more time recruiting. I mean, I was a low man on the totem pole when I got there. So I was in charge of alumni events. I was in charge of the one thing that Coach Flannery did allow me to do is he watched me do a workout. My first workout, he came down to evaluate because he didn't know how I would be in workouts. And from that point forward, I was in charge of all workouts, which was great. It was my release. I wasn't on the road as much recruiting because I don't think he knew if I could maybe do that at that level at the very start, but I was in the gym every day, all day. So I was in charge of two of the major facets. One was workouts, and the other one was scouting. He liked the way in which I did scouts. So I did almost I for my first year, I did pretty much every game from December on, which was exhausting. But at the same time, I knew the game plan. I was highly invested in the game plan, which was very good. And then going into my second year, he allowed me to let loose a little bit more into recruiting. And again, we were able to. It was also the same time when they switched from kind of like the Ivy League model and the Patriot League to scholarships. And we were able to get some kids that were really good. That again, the year after year I left, they upset Kansas. And then they upset Arkansas the next year with a lot of the kids that we recruited. And, like I said, I grew up in Germany, had a kid that we got to come in from Germany. He was one of the all-time greats there at Bucknell. And Chris McNaughton. And yeah, I mean it was a good experience. Same thing. I mean Coach Flannery coached Coach Rhodes, so it wasn't any different in terms of the model of hard work or effort. So it was just it was a good experience. I enjoyed it.
So that, I mean, that was, the pre-synergy days, which, every
Yeah.
coaching
Oh man,
staff
don't get me
has.
started.
So what, take me through kind of, your preparation for,
Well,
on the
there was a guy who had a monopoly, and I forget his name now. I mean, most older coaches would know it, but there was a guy who had a monopoly on video. And what you would do is you would get home from your game, and you essentially tape the tape your game, and then you would put it in a FedEx envelope, and you would overnight it to this guy who would make however many copies that would need to be made, and then he would send it out to whatever schools have requested. You'd buy into the service. The other thing is a lot of people would just call and say, hey, can we get your tape? And so, I mean, basically for every game that you had, especially early season, and then you'd go into your season, you would get, for everyone in your league, you'd get everybody's non-league games. And then you essentially probably watch like the last six. But then, you know, as you got into your early season, you're talking about games from the year before. You're talking about trying to get scrimmages, being on the phone, talking to people. I mean, it's just it's much more work than it is now, that's for sure. But and it was more exhausting. I mean, you're also talking about how you did it. You splice your own tape. I mean, you're talking about like the, you know, when your TV goes like white, you know, from the static. That's what you get in between your. I mean, it's old school. It was old school. But you know what? I think again, there's something to be said for what it taught you in terms of work. You know, now it's just a little bit easier. I mean, the technology is amazing, don't get me wrong, but you know, the amount of work you had to put in, the amount of sweat equity you had to put in, if you were really good at it, it was just about, you know, again, turning over every rock. And so that was part of my lessons from Coach Nunnally, my lessons from, you know, Coach Sensitz, who we had, Bill Raleigh, who we had, Coach Rhodes, who we had, Coach Flan, Donnie Friday, Brian Goodman. It was just a good group of people that I worked for. And, you know, again, it was not easy, but we did a hell of a job. We did a good job of being prepared.
Okay. And then, so after Bucknell, you were there for a few years, and then you kind of made the jump back to, or I guess, into the high school scene, going back down
I took a year off. I took a year off. I was a little burnt, you know. Uh-huh. I mean, again, working for playing for Coach Nunnally, working for Coach Rhodes, working for Coach Flannery, I was a little confused in terms of my path. I think I wanted to get into high school. And so I took about a year and a quarter off, and I moved to Louisville, Kentucky, and I did medical sales for a year. Super, I loved it. I loved the actual competition of, you know, sales. It's the same thing as recruiting. But then I started to miss getting in the gym. I started doing some private workouts. People found out that I coached basketball, and hey, can you work out my son? And so I started to get back into it. And then the Benedictine job came open, and Mike at the time was an assistant at VCU, and he knew somebody that was in and around the group, and I was able to get my foot in the door, and I was able to get one of the best jobs in the state. I mean, Warren Rutledge is a, you know, I followed some big time legends. You know, you follow Coach Nunnally and you work there, and you go to Coach Flannery at Bucknell, and then Warren Rutledge is, you know, he has 949 wins in the state of Virginia. And I was able to take a job that people cared about basketball, and it was awesome. I was 28 when I got it, and what an awesome experience there at that school.
I mean, so you're 28 and you get a head coaching job. What did you do at the beginning to kind of establish your identity or your culture when you first started there?
I think I had it all wrong. You know, I mean, it was one of those things where you step in, you're 28. I worked for three super type A individuals. So, you know, like kind of came in with my ideas, wasn't super open to probably everything. And consequently had myself and my staff had our worst year ever. We were 16-12. And we struggled, and I struggled, and it was one of those things, you know, I lost weight that year. It was just, you know, all the things that you can imagine that a coach goes through, I did. And then I kind of just sat back and was like, you know, what are we doing here? You know, the reason why in which you got back into high school was so you could run a version of a college program, but at the same time, you have to recognize these are still kids. These are 14 to 18-year-old kids. These are their formation years. And so, you know, what's most important? You know what I mean? And so what we started to do is we started to really worry about the stuff that was off the court. You know, am I being a good witness for these young men? Meaning like, you know, do I talk well? Do I talk, if I talk about women, do I talk about them in the correct manner? You know, at the time I started to date my wife, you know, when they saw me around her, they see me in a different light. You know, do we teach them respect? You know, how to be on time, how to be respectful to their teachers. You know, definitely communication, loyalty, you know, all the things in which we preach on the court, we started to worry about off the court more or less. And then the basketball part has always been easy. You know, kids want to get in the gym. Kids want to work. Kids want to please. You know, became more positive, which was hard for me because I think it was always like, you know, the class was a little bit more empty, half empty when I was younger. And since then, it's just kind of taken off. We've, you know, each year we've had successful seasons. But I think it became more about the kids and are we forming them as actual men? Are we doing a good job? And when we send them to college, are they fully prepared? Are they going to take the road that is correctly traveled as opposed to the road that is easy. And, I think, again, we haven't, no one's going to have 100% rate on that, but I think in the method in which we've done it, we've been able to turn out successful men. And because of that, it has translated to basketball. We have turned out some very, very, very good players from, guys that have played in the NBA to guys that have been successful Division III players to guys that have been walk-ons to guys that have been managers.
Well, one of the NBA players, Ed Davis, was at Benedictine and eventually went to UNC before now in a successful career in the NBA. So how was it, kind of you've been recruiting, at Randolph-Macon and Bucknell, and now you're the coach of one of the top players in the country with high major schools coming in to chat with one of your players. So how was that experience for you of just going through, I'd say at that level, recruitment with, Roy Williams, et cetera, coming through and, yeah, and trying to recruit one of your players?
I mean, it definitely introduced you to the world of college basketball. That's for sure. Obviously we're seeing what's happening now in terms of, what's been going on in college, but there were good people that recruited him. There were some people that were not so great in recruiting him. UNC was not one of them. I mean, Coach Williams was fantastic. You find that your job is to do whatever the family wants. That's the job of the high school coach. You're the devil's advocate on the questions. Hey, I really liked it. Why? Well, I liked it because of, the girls. Okay, do you think that's going to get you far in life? No. Okay, well, what about academics? So you have to be the person that has to ask the questions that they're not asking, because when they get there and they see campuses, it's like, oh, the gear is amazing. They've got this many guys in the NBA. Well, what if you don't get to the NBA? What's your next step? And you have to paint that picture. And so that's kind of really what we did. And I wish I would have had Ed when I was, 38 as opposed to 28. But, I think that what we did with Ed was a little bit different. We were able to move him around a bunch. A lot of people just said, hey, you're 6'9", 6'10", you're left-handed, let's just put you in the block. We never did that. We moved him around. He shot threes. He was able to pick, roll, pick, pop. I mean, to do certain things, I think, was able to help him learn how to play a little bit more and probably helped him prepare to when he got to UNC. But it was an awesome experience in terms of that, seeing that level of coach come through. At the same time, you also realize that they're doing their job. They're not coming through because they want to hang out with me. Even though they make it right. seem like, oh, you're the greatest thing ever, they're really not coming to hang out with me, because once the kid leaves, they don't come back. You're awestruck maybe at the very beginning, and then finally you just realize it's a business and your job is to protect your kid. And that's the most important thing.
Okay. So after, had a very successful run in Richmond at Benedictine, and then you made the jump up to the D.C. area, St. John's, and what I'd say is the best high school league in the country, the Washington Catholic League. Yep. What made you, kind of change directions and go up to St. John's in D.C.?
It was twofold. One was family. We had we had my first child down in Richmond, and my wife and I were both working, and we had zero help, and we were exhausted. That was the first part. And the second was I had scrimmaged those guys. I had scrimmaged against Gonzaga every year. I had gone to Alhambra, and we'd played against those teams, and we'd beaten some, and we lost to some. And I kind of just got tired of hearing about how great the WCAC was and how much better they were in terms of coaching and so forth and so on. And I wanted to – I'm competitive. I wanted to see if the brand in which we were doing in Richmond would work in D.C. and would an outsider, someone who's not from D.C. be able to hack it within, that basketball pool. And believe me, it's a pool full of piranhas. It's one of those things where you have to come in. And again, it's from the stuff that I learned from Rhodes and from Nunley and Flannery in terms of work ethic. I thought our 5-year run at St. John's was very good. And to me, it validated that what we were doing at Benedictine could be done and like you said, the best conference in the country.
For the Washington Catholic League, it's been predominantly dominated by DeMatha and Gonzaga over the years. Before you had come in, and Paul VI had definitely made steps to improve their programs, kind of starting in the mid-2000s. And you look at the list and every year it's DeMatha, Gonzaga winning with O'Connell and Paul VI sprinkled through, but we're able to capture a championship in 2016. So, I mean, how was it just, you know, you go into an established conference, but having to go up against some of these prestigious powerhouses and one getting, you know, getting talented kids, but, you know, kind of building up the program that hadn't won since 2000.
Well, you know, what I liked about the job at St. John's is that it had the facility, it had the right people behind it, but really it had a chip on its shoulder. I mean, and that's kind of the same for me. I mean, I was a Division III player. You know, I was told when I went to Macon I'd be a backup for 2 years. When I first got there, you know, I think we had 12 guys on the team. I felt like I was 20. And by middle of my freshman year, I was starter. And I just take that attitude every single day. And the same thing into when we were at St. John's, really just about creating the right relationships with the AAU guys that were there. And then secondly, really just recruiting the families and letting them know what our vision was. And we wanted guys that wanted to, you know, take down the empire is probably the best way to describe it. You know, I mean, the empire that be DeMatha, the empire that beat Gonzaga. And, you know, I always told families, the line I always gave was, in history, every empire has fallen. And it just takes somebody with a vision. And so we had a vision with what we wanted to do. And we wanted the kids that wanted to, didn't want to be a part of the same crowd. We wanted guys that wanted to walk a different path. And we got that. We got guys that were hard-nosed, tough, and talented. And maybe we didn't get the guys that were as talented, you know, as say DeMatha or Gonzaga. But we got guys that were maybe a little bit less talented. And then because of our work ethic and my staff and being how good my staff was and getting our kids better, we were able to ascend the mountaintop and, we won a championship. We won a DC championship. We won obviously a WCSC championship. That was the first one in schools in 16 years. And we did it from the first position. So it wasn't fluke. It was one of those things that we did for an entire season. So I was, again, it was just one of those things where you can't be scared of those places. You know, they put their pants on you put your pants on the same way. You know, everybody breathes the same. Everybody, it's just one of those things where we wanted to get kids that wanted to have the same vision we did, and we did. And we got kids that matched that up, and we were able to, get to the top.
So one of those kids, Anthony Cowan, who is now playing at Maryland, he was the Washington Met Player of the Year in that championship year, I believe. So what, how was it, I guess, identifying him from an early age and recruiting him before he got to St. John's?
I got the job at St. John's. Anthony was just finishing his eighth grade year, and he had already committed to Good Counsel. And then, fortunately for us, his coach had to take a leave of absence, and he became kind of a free agent, per se, and his family actually reached out to us. They came over, and I just think we did a good job of laying out the vision for him. And you know, it's true to Anthony. This is what most people don't understand. Anthony was like a second-team all-conference as a freshman. He came over to us, and he sat behind, because we finished first that second year. We had a really good team. We flamed out a little bit at the end, but we finished first in the regular season. We had Trey Campbell, Darian Anderson, Jelly Bryant, Mike Morseau, I mean, James Palmer. I mean, guys are still playing. And he came off the bench for an entire year. Now, he hated it. I think it really helped him in terms of his, building his chip on his shoulder, which he has a monstrous one, which is why we kind of matched up really well. But he's just such a talent. He's such a talent, such a competitor. And, he willed our team. And we had other good players as well, Jeff Doughton, DeJuan Clayton, Kalia Sykes. We had a good group, a good mix of tough kids, but Anthony's he's special. I mean, he's 5'10", and he goes to Maryland his first year. He bumps Melo off the ball, and then last year he takes a monster jump, and he'll do the same thing next year as well in the conference.
Looking back on that time period, I'm curious. Was there either a team or a gym that you always kind of got up for a little more than others, or was there any kind of particular game that sticks out to you the most from your time at St. John's?
We beat my first year, we beat DeMatha at home. This is probably when I realized how much it meant to the people of St. John's. But my first year, we beat DeMatha at home. And every game, just so you understand, every game in that league, when you play DeMatha Gonzaga, if you go to PVI, I mean, PVI is their gym. Their fans are unbelievable. I mean, I love going in there. I love going to McNamara. small gym, hot. I mean, I love going to a lot of places, but we beat the math at home, and you know, I was excited we won. I knew we needed to win because we wanted to protect home court, and we lost to them earlier in the year. And so we win, and I'm walking off the floor after shaking hands, and I have an alumnus from maybe like, he's probably in his 50s, maybe, and he picks me up and bear hugs me. And he hits me with a, "You don't know what this means." And he's like, and he's crying. And I'm like, wow. He's like, and so I walked up the floor, and then my AD let me know that it had been the first time that DeMath or St. John's had beat DeMath in 10 seasons.
Wow.
And I'm like, you know, for me, I'm like, well, that has nothing to do with us. You know, that was, it's in the past, but I didn't know how much it meant to the school or the people or the alums. And, you know, from that point on, I just kept building. And I would say that would be the moment where I was like, you know, this is big time, especially for a lot of the people. And then obviously, you know, our championship game versus DeMatha, you know, not only did we won in convincing fashion. You know, they ended up having the number one pick in the draft. We did a heck of a job defensively. You know, DJ Harvey, I mean, there were multiple guys that are Division I players, and we were able to do it and do it convincingly. It wasn't like we won on a buzzer beater. I thought that was extremely special, especially for our group of kids.
Okay, and then that kind of leads me to your, you know, your current stop right now down in Florida at IMG. And, you know, I've only seen pictures, but the facilities they have down there are obviously some of the best in the country, let alone the world. And how was the process for you of going from St. John's in D.C. to now IMG Academy down in Florida?
Well, I was just sitting in my couch in May of last year, and I got a phone call from the director that said my name had been kicked around, and he wanted to gauge my interest. And, you know, I knew of it. I didn't know exactly what it was completely, and so I was able to get down here to see it, and I was just blown away by the facilities and what these young men have at their disposal. And I figured with that, coupled with, you know, the way in which we coach, in which we preach, you know, team, and, you know, we move the ball really well, and our guys do a heck of a job of sharing. And I wanted to, you know, after interviewing and talking about it and seeing the vision, I wanted to see again on this supposed national stage, you know, you get to the Oak Hills, the Montverts, the Finleys, the Huntingtons, would, you know, a group of kids that sacrifices a little bit by moving the ball, and you have four guys or five guys averaging double figures, would that be able to take down a team that has, you know, one or two guys that just has a big name? And so kind of same version of when I moved to WCAC, you know, I kept looking at it, you know, we're in WCAC, we're playing the toughest conference in the country. We finished, you know, 30 and 6 or something like that, and we finished 16th or 17th or 18th in the country. And I look up and it's like Oak Hill, Finley, Montverde, and I'm like, well, I think we could beat them, you know, in my mind. And so, you know, this place offers the facilities. This place offers the opportunity for those level of kids. And then it's up to us to see if we can get them to buy into, you know, the culture of what we want. So that was my basis of making the move. And not to mention the weather is 10 times better. I don't know if I'll ever move back. I mean, it's unbelievable out here or down here, but
especially during the wintertime.
Yeah, I mean, I found that from mid September until probably about 2.5 weeks ago, it was the most. I mean, we went all over the country this year, and everywhere we went, you know, -1, -0, rain, snow, sleet. You know, fly back here, it's 70 and perfect, and I just felt happier. It's probably the best way to describe it. You know, we fly back into D.C. and I'd be like, oh my God, traffic. But you know, here it's just a different animal in that sense. But I mean, it was the same type of competitiveness in which myself and my staff moved to D.C. was the same thing in which, you know, when we took the job here at IMG.
Well, you kind of mentioned, you use the words different animal, and I'm going to put it in a different sense. So at St. John's, you know, you have cutthroat recruiting of just trying to get 7th and 8th graders into, you know, St. John's or DeMatha, et cetera. But now you're kind of more on a global stage where, you know, right now Josh Green is from Australia and you're getting kids from all over the country. So how does that really change I guess your recruiting philosophy of kind of going forward of dealing, you know, not just this DC, Maryland, Virginia area, but now really you have quite, you know, more of an expansive reach in terms of trying to get new kids and new talent.
Well, I guess I'm new to the national stage on that level. So, I mean, the kids that we got to come here this year and buy into what we had to do, I was super excited about. I mean, we were going in the right direction, and obviously our best player left middle of the season to go to Kansas, and obviously that worked out well for Kansas. It kind of hurt us a little bit, but, you know, the kids rallied together, and we won our last 11. But I think to your question, really, it's the same thing. Now you have to start to create relationships with, you know, multiple AAU organizations, and then from there, multiple people and families. But I've been fortunate enough to know a lot of people in the business. You know, I mean, I've been in it since I was 28, as a head coach, and then 5 years as a college coach. So I've met a lot of great people along the way, and I've tried to keep my nose clean, and we've had a lot of people that have called, you know, a ton of people reach out, hey, listen, this might be interesting, you might look into this, what do we think about this? And that coupled with us just going out and creating relationships with people, I think we're going to, like I said, I'm competitive. I think we'll eventually ascend ourselves to the mountaintop if we keep working the right way. It's a different animal in terms of, you've widened your search. It makes it a little bit easier, truthfully. I mean, in D.C., you're going after the same 20 kids. And, you know, you have the entire WCAC, not to mention you got Sidwell Friends, you got Bullis, you know, you got, you know, Rock Creek Christian. I mean, you got tons of schools there. Yeah, and to recruit the same 20 to 25, 30 kids, that's tough. Yep. You know, that's, like you said, that's cutthroat. Whereas here, you know, if you lose a top 20 kid, you know, there's another somewhere. And it's just about finding the right ones that match up with what you want to do in terms of your culture.
You mentioned losing Silvio during the season, and you know, you also have players such as Josh Green going to Basketball Without Borders, in February. So how was it this season, just kind of dealing with maybe some things you hadn't dealt with previously of players, you know, finishing up halfway through and going on to college or other players going to international camps?
Yeah, I mean, this was a definite weird year all the way around. I mean, we had the hurricane, so we lost 2 weeks of school for that. After that, because of the hurricane, we had water damage in one of our gyms, so we lost the gym, so we lost prep time. We were practicing one certain way, and we were as high as third in the country after Chick-fil-A. And then Silvio, it was a 50-50 thing whether he'd leave or not, and honestly, we thought he was going to stay because there were some things that we felt just in terms of our conversations, he was thinking about staying. And then, in the ninth hour, he decided to make the decision to go to Kansas. I mean, who's going to fault a kid that goes to play for a Hall of Famer? You know, I'm just a schmo high school coach. And then there's Bill Self, you know, I'd make the same decision. The thing is, once you get into that part, because we're traveling all around and because we are where we are, we also had some injuries. I mean, Joel Mariel was injured basically the entire year. And then at the time when Silvio left, Keyshawn Embry was still injured. So we went from a rotation of basically five guys to five high-level guys, and we lost one, and so we had to kind of figure that out. So we took a couple losses, which were understandable. I mean, we had no center, really. Everybody had to guard a certain position that was different from them. Guys like you mentioned, Josh, Noah Farrakhan, Jamias Ramsey, Darius Days. I mean, Darius Days is a 3-4 man. He's guarding fives. So we had to completely reinvent the way we had to play on the fly. And I thought we did a pretty decent job and within the time frame we had. And then, of course, we finished the season, and not many people know this, but we took a trip to Europe. We went to Europe for 10 days, right after the season ended. We went to Rome and Barcelona, and we played some games over there, and we opened the eyes up of our young men to some culture outside of the United States, which I thought was even more valuable. Came back, and then, we had spring break, and then Josh had Basketball Without Borders, and then you got AAU, and guys are gone on Fridays and Mondays. I mean, so it's a lot more to deal with. But again, it's about managing your kids and their families and letting them know what you can and cannot do. But like an opportunity like for Josh for Basketball Without Borders, you can't tell somebody no. I mean, he's the youngest kid there. And that's an experience in which he'll never get. And our school, the thing about this is our school understands that. I mean, we've got top-level tennis kids that are barely here playing in tournaments, but they're still going to school. They have tutors and online, and they go back and forth with their teachers. So Josh was up to date on his homework when he got back, which was great. And there was a village of people behind that to make that work. And that's what I love about IMG. It's not just like, oh, well, he's gone for Basketball Without Borders, and when he gets back, he's going to have, you know, X, Y, and Z. It's like, no, while he's gone, he'll be doing this, and this person will be in charge of making sure of that. And when he gets back, he's a tutor, and he meets at this point and that point. So even though he was gone, he missed school, when he came back, it was a smooth transition.
Okay. Well, yeah, I mean, quite, especially at the high school level, getting to, you know, travel the U.S., but then getting to go overseas. So kind of last question for you, and I know you weren't, you know, the head coach of this team, but I know there's a lot of, you know, as the NBA draft gets closer, but a guy that maybe you saw at practice of Anfernee Simons. I was just kind of curious, were you able to, did you guys practice against the grad school team at all? Or
We scrimmaged them one time. I saw him play multiple times. Here's what I know about Anfernee. Can shoot the heck out of the ball. Physically, he still needs to probably get stronger. Handles the ball well. Super athletic. Probably one of the harder workers I've seen. That's the thing. He's really quiet, but he broke a finger earlier in the year. It cast on, and while they were working out, he would be on the side working on his left hand. But every time they ran sprints, he ran sprints, and I've never saw him lose a sprint, not once. Now you're talking about a top 10 kid in the country, and you know they're doing sprints. And I've had multiple kids that are top 10 kids that launch their sprints. And you know this, the ones that are different, the ones that are the ones that go the extra effort, do the extra sprints or get the extra shots up are the ones that are special. I don't know where he'll be drafted, and I'm not sure if he'll be drafted and if he stash him in the G League or whatever you need to do, but I think he'll be a kid that will be successful just based on his work ethic. And honestly, at this point in the NBA, shooting is at a premium, and he can really shoot the heck out of the ball.
Yep. Okay, well, you know, I really appreciate you coming onto the podcast, and as I said, was looking forward to chatting with you about your journey. You know, I remember back when I was 15, 16, and you had the responsibility to take me to the hospital for x-rays during basketball camp, and, you know,
yes, going
from D3 to D1 assistant, and now, you know, the head coach at all these esteemed high schools and IMG. So definitely been exciting for me to kind of learn more about your journey and your path to how you got to where you are right now.
Well, I appreciate it, Sean. The trip to the ER was definitely heartfelt. That's for sure. It was, no, I'm kidding. I always loved camp. I always loved camp. And truthfully, you know what? Going to the ER was better than having to probably monitor where our guys were, what they were doing. And I'm glad to see where you've gotten here in hoops. And if you need anything down the road, you let me know.
Okay. Sounds great.